This one is on Buddy Ministry specific. Last one was Disability 101. And I just found out that some people thought it was in Room 101 and got lost. I apologize. So many times churches say to me, what's the most important thing to do? And I say, first thing is a buddy ministry. You can call it whatever you want. I'm going to call it buddy ministry throughout this training because that's kind of the generic term. And a buddy ministry is a one-on-one, and we'll go into that. But I believe it's so important because this is what gets families into your church. And it's having that, being able to serve child, youth, or adult. So I start out by saying, what I'm going to say next, if you don't like what I'm going to say, you can send me an email. Because my email is going to be dead in 5 weeks because I'm retiring. So Sarah will get it. So, no. I love Tim Tebow and the Night to Shine proms. Phenomenal. One year I went to three. Because they're all the same night, so there were three in our area. Went to them. They now call it Shine On, which I'm thrilled. Love them. But so many times I've gone to churches and I'll say, do you have a disability ministry? We do Night to Shine, the Tim Tebow prom. Do y'all know what I'm talking about when I talk about Night to Shine? So it's a huge prom. It's the Friday night before Valentine's Day. It's put on by the Tim Tebow Foundation. Churches do it. It's amazing. It's incredible. They're called Kings and Queens. They have red carpets. It's phenomenal. But what happens if that's on a Saturday night and everybody's excited and says, this church gets it, and they show up on a Sunday morning, and the church goes, oh, we don't have anything for your children. That's why I struggle with it. Good news is, Tim Tebow, Shine On, is now working with Johnny and Friends and trying to help churches develop programs, which I think is so important. This is why I say you start inward. You don't start with outreaches first, like the Tim Tebow prom or what I talked about last time, the caregiver. You start inward. What do our families need? And I believe the best thing is the buddy ministry. I go over this real quick. Once again, I will say that the mission of Johnny and Friends is to glorify God as we communicate the gospel and mobilize the global church. And that's what we do. We talked about the irresistible church, the definition. For those of you not here, I will go over it real quick. We believe an irresistible church for families affected by disability is an authentic community built on the hope of Christ that compels people affected by disability to fully belong. Families affected by disability can really sense if you're being authentic or if you're just being nice. They can sense that. We want it to be an authentic community. We all need the hope of Christ. And we want it to be so welcoming in your churches that it compels people affected by disability to fully belong. And notice here I say affect it, not the person with the disability. Because my husband had a disability, I was affected because I had a spouse with a disability.
Our experience with other churches before Calvary is we always were either being called out because they couldn't help Josiah in a certain way or the material there wasn't fit for our kids at that time for their age. The feeling was that he may lack the understanding of what the lesson was going to be. It was a dismissive attitude where we'll just put him in a corner, let him color and play. And as a parent, you kind of felt a little bit frustrated, a little bit angry that you're in this place by yourself and people don't really understand you.
I've had Luke with me at my other church. There would be times the kids just would either laugh at Luke or make comments about how he doesn't talk and he only screams. And so that was difficult. My favorite thing about the Special Abilities Ministry is the sense of welcome.
I have seen a drastic change in the way that Calvary really envisions and sees families and people and children affected by special abilities. It's gotten into the water system here. It's who we are. It's what we do.
When we found Calvary, it was just a place where everyone is uniquely loved in their own special way. Everyone is so involved and so engaged and so loving to our children, where there is zero concern about how your kids are going to be. It's just, you know, they're loved and they're taken care of.
Luke is able to attend during the worship service, and if he is disoriented or dysregulated, he has a nice, dark, quiet room where he can be comforted and be able to then go back into the activities.
By the end of our church experience before Pear Orchard, it really had gotten to the point where we just really felt like a burden. Pear Orchard has totally changed our family, and they've always been so encouraging and just so intentional with our family.
So having a disability ministry here at our church has had significant impact on many, many different things. Our congregation now see it as normal to be around those with special needs rather than unusual. We have several of our young men with special needs who serve as ushers with a buddy during Sunday morning worship. We have both a special needs Sunday school class on Wednesday evenings and on Sunday mornings.
Charlie loves to come here. He knows he's welcome, he's loved, he's happy.
Even kids that are in our self-contained program, we integrate in for worship every Sunday. That's part of getting into the water, because these younger kids now have been exposed to kids with special abilities from such a young age that when kids make noises or kids are yelling or jumping around, younger kids are now used to it and they're excited to have these kids as a part of their community.
I deal with autism. For me, people don't like really see that. If Calvary didn't have a special abilities ministry, I feel like kids with special needs wouldn't be able to find a way through Christianity.
Joshua would always call Pear Orchard his church. He feel included. He looked forward to coming to church.
I pass out the bulletins and I do the fist bumps and handshakes. I love this church.
It really does break my heart when I know that families have driven an hour to get to church here, or an hour to come to our respite program, and driven by 1,000 churches on their way from their home to our church. That's not the vision and the mission. It should be that every church has a place for every child, for every family.
In many respects, this is not unique. This is just the body doing what the body ought to be doing. It will dynamically change and improve the life of your own congregation.
Get to know the community. Get to know what challenges families face.
Just start. There's a family that needs you, and I can promise you that there are people in your church body that feel passionately, that have skills. At this church, they are seen, and they're loved, and they are so important. They're vital. And to be a part of that, it has been a life-changing experience for our family.
You can see what a difference having a ministry to children affected by disability can do to a family through that video. And you saw those one-on-one buddies walking around there. So about 1 billion people around the world are affected by disability. 26% of Americans have a disability. 29% of Americans are affected by a disability. And I have this up here. It says 1 in 36 children are diagnosed with autism. But I'm going to ask Sarah, who's has a kiddo with autism, to correct me on that one.
So for those of you who are in the first one, the CDC came out with a brand new study this summer that updated that number to be 1 in 31. I have a son who's 22, and when he was born, the number was 1 in 150. So today it's 1 in 31. And the one thing I didn't say in the last one is that it's 4 times more prevalent than boys than girls. And in that study, we also heard that the severity rate was 4% all the way back in 20 years ago, and today it's 25%.
So we're not here to talk about why. And I know in the landscape of our culture, of our country right now, people want to talk about that. We don't need to talk about that in the church. We just need to serve them and serve them well and serve them with excellence. Because the numbers are growing. Some of it is, we have more wonderful diagnostic tools now, which is wonderful. But we just want to serve all the kiddos, youth and adult, who are on the spectrum well. And people with disabilities are the most marginalized and underemployed people group in the world. One of the statistics that is very sad to me, and this is getting so much better, but it's 11% of evangelical churches have an active disability ministry. It's according to a study we did a few years ago at Johnny and Friends, which means 89% do not have an active disability ministry. I am thrilled to say that I think this statistic is much better than these. Because, again, this is probably about a 10-year ago statistic, and churches are getting it now. And I believe because we have so many more kiddos being diagnosed with autism, it's our gift to the church because it's going to make us do something. And I love that. And about 90% of individuals with a significant disability are unchurched. So you know there are people in your neighborhood who are not going to church. And so many times we can get a little like, well, why aren't they coming to church? My church would welcome them. You would welcome them, but would they be able to fully belong? So a buddy ministry to me is the first ministry a church should do when it comes to disability ministry, because you want to be able to serve that family when they come in the door. Even if you don't have any kiddos with disabilities in your church now, set up a buddy program so when they come, you're prepared. That is the most beautiful thing you can do for families affected by disability. And a buddy ministry is one-on-one support so families can all worship together. I talked about this a little bit in the previous workshop, but so many times families don't go to church on a Sunday morning because there's not a program for their child. They're afraid of their behavior issues. They're afraid if they might call out. They might not be able to sit still long enough. So maybe one Sunday mom will go with the child, and then the next Sunday dad will go with the child. And they keep doing that, and then all of a sudden they go, you know what, this is just too hard. Let's just stay home. And I get it. You know, they're not able to worship as a family unit. And that's what this is all about, is being able to give the families a safe space. And it's a ministry, not a program. Programs are about results. Ministries about people. And I think so many times, don't you get weary of hearing, well, that's a program of the church. I'm like, ooh, I cringe every time I hear that. So what are the main objectives of a buddy ministry? Why should you have one? The first objective is family support. A one-on-one provides assistance, support, and friendship to the children, youth, or adult with disabilities so the whole family can be a valuable part of the congregation. Maybe for the first time, you heard people say, you know, we just didn't even care anymore. We didn't want to go. And now all of a sudden, because they can come in on a Sunday morning and their child, youth, or adult with that disability knows exactly where to go, where they're going to meet their buddy, and mom and dad come into church. Or all of a sudden, dad can go back to playing drums on the worship team because their child has a one-on-one buddy. And that is so important. So it truly is family support. It's supporting that whole family unit. Because think about it, when the parents stop coming to church, their typical children stop coming to church. So then they're not having a faith-based environment. They're not hearing a good news of Jesus. So we want to make sure that it's there to support the family. Yes.
I have a story.
She has a story.
So my church just started a buddy ministry a year ago. There had been a family coming that has a 10-year-old boy who's pretty severe on the autism spectrum. And every time they went, she's a single mom and her teenage son and then this 10-year-old boy, they would put him in the nursery to sit and do whatever he does. He would sit, he would stim, he would vocalize, he would yell, he would holler, he would whatever, right? But they would put him in the nursery. When we started this buddy ministry, I brought Noah out of the ministry, gave him a one-on-one. He's now thriving in the typical elementary classroom. Mom now is no longer watching her phone, waiting for that text message, you need to come get him right now. Or, God forbid, he comes blowing into the sanctuary looking for her. Now she was actually sitting for the service, being spiritually fed, and a couple weeks into it, she got baptized. So that's how powerful a buddy ministry can be.
And there's a great example of family support. They supported the whole family. It's also about friendship building. We would hope that once somebody becomes a buddy, they develop friendships with that family and with that child, youth, or adult that they're serving. And we talked about it can be a two-way. It doesn't have to be a friendship to somebody, but with somebody. So it truly is about friendship building. It's also about discipleship making. Jesus said, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things. I believe anybody can be discipled. Anybody. I believe a child youth or adult who has a severe intellectual or cognitive disability or is neurodivergent can be discipled. It might look differently. It might be different. And I think so many times we kind of get stuck in a box in church. We need to step out of those boxes sometimes, because I truly believe that anybody can be discipled. And you know, we at Johnny and Friends are big on belonging. You heard this in the last workshop. But the main goal is giving that family a place of belonging. We all want that place of belonging. I love this. It says, Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and don't hinder them, for such belongs to the kingdom of heaven." Didn't say, "Let the little children come unto me, except those who have severe disabilities." He said, "Let the little children come unto me." So as children's ministry leaders, it's your call. It's not a choice to minister to children, youth, or adults with disabilities. And in Luke 14, it says, "Go out and find them and make them come in." There's not many places in Scripture where Jesus is very specific in a parable where he says, "Go out and make them come in so that my house may be full." Because these relationships will encourage love, communion, and compassion. So, what does a one-on-one buddy do? So let's take a deep dive into what they do. And Sarah, feel free to suggest anything as well. So a buddy provides participation. So now you have a buddy assigned, and I will go more into how do you make that happen. But what a buddy provides is participation. So now, because you saw, I love the visual of that in that video where you saw them walking like going down the aisle, you know, and mom and dad are back there, but there they go. And so it helps to, a buddy helps their friends participate so he or she can fully be part of everything. It helps them with communication assistance. Buddies can be the voice and advocate for their friends. Positive behavior reinforcement, and we'll go a little deeper into behavior in a minute, because all behavior is some form of communication. I think so many times what stops some people from wanting to be a buddy is fear. Like, what if I don't know what to do? What if I say the wrong thing? What if they have a meltdown? What am I going to do? You will get to know that child, youth, or adult once you're a buddy, so you will help them be able to participate. Maybe they can't participate in the game physically. You know, my husband used to drive him crazy when people wouldn't invite him to sporting events. He was a sport guy because they thought he couldn't participate. He said, "I can still sit there and cheer and be part of it." So it's helping that child, youth, or adult figure out a creative way to participate in all activity. And then communication assistance. Maybe they do have, maybe they're nonverbal. The lovely thing, since I've been in this now before some of you were even born, I have watched communication devices come to be. When I first started doing this, that wasn't possible. But now they have them. We used to have to do these little peck boards, you know, and now they have iPads and they can communicate. And you can help them communicate. You can help them communicate their needs to the teacher that's in that classroom. And then help support them with behavior. The other thing you're going to do is, as we talked about, discipleship. We are called to make disciples of all nations, and all nations includes people with disabilities, kiddos with disabilities, and discipleship can look very different, like I said. I know some people have said, you know, how am I really making a difference? This child's nonverbal, and one of the suggestions I'll give a little later, but I'm going to give it now, is if a child can't participate in a typical classroom, one of the things I've seen the church I used to go to do, they had these big wagons, and they would just pull them all around the church, and they would sing to them, and to me, that's discipleship. You're being Jesus to them. Maybe you're singing a song to them. That's discipleship. It can look all different ways. It doesn't have to be according to the books that we read. 1, 2, 3. Discipleship. Friendship. If you're a good buddy, you get to know the person you're serving. You know, you get to know what's a trigger, what's not a trigger. And you let them get to know you a little bit. And you also provide safety. And I'm going to take a little deeper dive now into all of these. So participation. You're going to encourage proper social interaction. And so once the buddy is, this is the training, and Sarah can come and do an official training to your church if you would like that, or we have lots of things online. But some of the things that we encourage is proper social interaction. We want the church setting to be a great place for both the typical children and your children who have disabilities. So we want to make sure they're being appropriate. And that's what the buddy helps provide. The buddy sits right beside them. So make sure they're having appropriate social interaction. So many times the buddy might, the child, youth, or adult with a disability might always want to call out. And it's okay to say, you know, Johnny, right now we're just going to be quiet. We're going to let somebody else answer that question. That's okay. And so we help the friends with crafts. We help them in learning activities and games. Doesn't mean we do it all for them. You get to know that child, youth, or adult. And you figure out, you know what? They can't use a scissor. I'll do that, but they can glue. Seems like a simple thing. That's important. Those are important things. It also helps your friends stay focused during listening time and knowing when to ask questions. And I'm going to go a little bit, let's see, where can I, I'm trying to figure out what I, because we're going to run out of time. Let me just see. Yeah, I'm going to wait to go over that later. So it's helping them stay focused. And if they can't stay focused, you can say, you know, if you start to wiggle too much, we might have to step outside of the room. And that's okay too, because that's helping also with the proper social interaction. Communication. We're going to help our friends communicate their thoughts and needs clearly. One of the worst things you can do to someone who has maybe a speech difficulty is act like you understand what they're saying. What if they're saying they have to go to the bathroom? You could really be in trouble. And you might say, but I don't want to keep saying, I don't understand you. I don't understand you. But by saying that, you are saying, I care enough about what you're trying to communicate that I'm going to keep asking you till I figure it out. We have a young man that is wonderful. He's been part of our ministry for a very long time. He comes to all of our family retreats. He's our video guy. He has cerebral palsy, and he's very hard to understand. And just at our last retreat, I said, Tim, I still can't understand you. And he just shook his head and goes, I give up, Sib. It's been how many years? And I forget what he quoted. But I sat there and we figured it out again. But I developed a friendship with him because I wanted to know what he was saying. So figure it out. You can do that. You also help them communicate lessons and concepts, adapting to their needs. And you definitely communicate God's love for this person as they are, because remember, they were created in the image of God.
Can I give an example?
Absolutely.
What that looks like. So we're going to take my little friend Noah as an example. Noah can't participate in the group, so he sits on the floor and does other activities, and his one-on-one sits with him. Well, I was sitting with him one Sunday, and the lesson was about kindness, and she was using the relationship between David and Jonathan to talk about kindness and how they were showing kindness to one another. So Noah and I were building Legos. I was pulling a piece out and handing it to him, and he was building some kind of contraption that he had in his brain for creativity. So I'm handing him a piece one at a time, and I'm now starting to feed him from the lesson I'm hearing the teacher say. And I'm doing it in a simplistic way because I know that Noah cognitively, right, is not at that level. So I'm saying things like, Noah, you and I are friends just like David and Jonathan were friends. Noah, I'm handing you a Lego because I'm sharing Legos with you and you're building with it. Noah, this is how we show kindness to our friends. And I was just doing it one-on-one in that way and ending it always with, God loves you, Jesus loves you. And just making it very simple, but that's how it can look in real time.
Absolutely. Simplify, simplify, simplify. Simplify communication. Talk less. Sometimes kiddos who maybe are neurodivergent or have sensory issues, I'm talking a lot right now, and I would be totally overwhelming one of them. So you want to talk less, be concrete, and match your level to their level of function. So instead of saying, well, good morning, I'll use Noah. Good morning, Noah. Today we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And Noah's going, what, Miss Sarah? Noah, we're going to go to class now. So you want to simplify, simplify, simplify. You want to reduce input, fewer people talking. Sometimes it's just so overwhelming. Church can be so overwhelming. And sometimes now, because now we have lights flashing, we have sounds, we have loud music. For someone who has sensory issues, it's just so overwhelming. So you want to find out when you're serving someone, figure out what are some of those triggers. Like, if we're quiet right now, that would be me, right? I'm the only one talking. Do you hear anything? You do. You hear the air conditioning going. Some kiddos, that can sound like thunder. Truly can. There's a church in New Jersey. I love it. Before you walk in the sanctuary, there's a huge bin with noise-canceling headphones that they have available for anybody that needs them. I love that. What a way of saying we care about you. So fewer people talking. You want to reduce noise and other sensory input if need be, and provide lots of time. I think so many times also we have such live in this fast-paced society, and sometimes kiddos, youth, and adults with disabilities, they can't keep up. So prepare for transitions. Prepare. Think about what the schedule is going to look like for the day. And I'm going to do a little deeper dive into the different types of classrooms that can be there. But you want to truly simplify things for them. You want to provide that physical assistance. First is mobility. You saw some of the kiddos in the video. They might use a motorized wheelchair. They might use a manual wheelchair. If they use a manual wheelchair, say, would you like me to push you? Don't just push them. Just say, would you like assistance? Maybe they like to be independent and they don't want that. Always ask if you can assist them. Don't just do it. That's the worst thing you can do. And you're saying, I care enough about you that even though it's obvious to you they need assistance with their mobility, it's just so polite to ask. See if they can play games. So maybe they're playing a simple thing like duck, duck, goose, goose. A child in a wheelchair can play that. You might have to be the goose or the duck or whichever is which. I forget anymore. But evolve. Figure out ways to make this happen. You also are there to help with appropriate seating. We don't want those children, youth, or adults running all around. But there's simple things you can do to provide seating. One of the things I suggest is hula hoops. Sometimes kiddos who maybe are on the spectrum, they like a safe space, and that hula hoop is their space. It's just too much. There's too many people here. So you give them a hula hoop, and that's their space, and no one can come into that space without permission. I sometimes had people say to me, but is it fair that Noah gets a hula hoop and none of the other kiddos do? Is it fair that Noah has autism? Let's use it as a teaching moment for our other children. Let's use those all as teaching moments. It's also helping them to just be at the right place at the right time. We also want to keep them safe. And this is really important. We want to make sure that everybody is aware of their safety needs. This could be as simple as using a pair of scissors. You don't want to give a pair of scissors to someone who maybe has spasms. Could be something we don't want to see happen. Or it could be as important as removing your friend when a meltdown's happening. And this certainly involves elopement, and that's not running away to get married, that's just running away. And I can't tell you how quick some kiddos with disabilities are. Literally, you cannot take your eyes off of them. Some children you serve may need two buddies because they're that quick. So you could have an older buddy and a younger buddy. But we want to keep them safe. And one of the things that will help us do that is to figure out, what are they trying to communicate in the midst of the behavior issue? So my video doesn't work here, but your wonderful tech guys have pulled it up, and I think you can show it.
Managing challenging behaviors is simple, but not necessarily easy. There is no silver bullet to perfect behavior, but we can look for the reason behind a behavior and seek ways to promote more appropriate behaviors. Though you can't control behavior, you can do things that make it easier for your students to do the right thing. Helping promote appropriate behaviors is a means to an end, the opportunity to hear the gospel, grow in Christ, and have fellowship with other believers. Though we are focusing on children's behavior, these principles also apply to adults with intellectual or developmental disabilities. The key is tailoring your communication to the chronological age of the person you are talking to, not to their developmental age. Adults should be talked to as adults. Some keys to understanding behavior. All behavior is communication. For every effect, there is a cause. Outside input like bright lights, loud noises, and disrupted routines may cause a particular behavior. As you get to know each individual, you will likely notice patterns. Talking with parents or caregivers provides important information for determining the triggers that cause challenging behaviors. Challenging behavior may not be bad behavior, but instead might be their way of saying, I'm overstimulated and I don't know how to ask for help. Consistency is essential. Individuals with behavioral issues may struggle to understand the flow of a weekly program. Walking around and talking are appropriate behaviors during free time, but inappropriate behaviors during a time of teaching. Keeping a consistent schedule helps everyone anticipate and prepare for what's coming next. Reinforcement systems like rewards and discipline should similarly be used with consistency. What might seem like bad behavior may actually be a misunderstanding of what is expected at a given moment. Many individuals with autism have sensory processing issues, which can cause extreme reactions to things like fluorescent lights, loud noises, or strong scents. Sensory processing issues may also cause sensory-seeking behavior, such as foot stomping, touching a certain texture, or even chewing on objects. Rather than dealing with these behaviors as character issues, seek first to address the sensory issue. Some guidelines for easing overstimulation include limiting options for playtime to no more than 3 choices, changing activities every 5 to 10 minutes, keeping general noise levels to a lower volume, setting firm boundaries and sticking to them, offering sensory breaks in quiet areas, and providing sensory fidget toys like prickly balls or Play-Doh during high concentration times, such as the story or teaching time. And what about extreme behaviors? Volcanoes don't erupt without warning. And yet for those who aren't paying attention, the explosion seems to come in an instant. Behavior doesn't occur in a vacuum either. Techniques for managing behaviors are meant to prevent volcanic eruptions. But sometimes the volcano erupts anyway. So what do we do when there is an extreme behavior, such as a meltdown? First, stay calm. Create distance between the child and their peers. Seek help from another leader, because adults should avoid being alone with the child. Do your best to determine and eliminate the cause of the meltdown. And resist the urge to immediately contact parents, unless the child is a danger to themselves or others. And what if someone is not cooperating? Stay calm and clarify expectations. Use first-then language like, first this, then that. This helps everyone prepare for the next activity. For example, we'll listen to the Bible story first, and then go to the playground. You can also introduce reward incentives. Find what motivates and excites your friend. If you sit quietly during the story, you can go on the swing after. And what if you've got a runner? Consider limiting the number of exits. If a child does exit from a classroom, a minimum of 2 people should follow. Students exhibiting this behavior are likely running from or to something, so unlocking the trigger is key. Introduce measures to help your friend understand the schedule and transitions for the day. Visual schedules, timers, and one-on-one buddies are helpful tools. Visual timers help people who struggle with feeling how long things should last. They might be thinking, I'm done with crafts, and after the craft, we go to the car. This might lead to someone finishing their craft and immediately running to the parking lot. A visual timer helps avoid this. You don't need to be an expert on behavioral strategies, nor are you engaging in behavioral therapy at church. However, continuity in how behaviors are managed at school and at home can be a great benefit at church. Don't be afraid to ask parents, caregivers, and the professional therapists in an individual's life for tips on what will also work at church. And remember, we want church to be a loving, positive, fun experience. You will have days that are incredibly challenging, a day you are certain you won't ever unlock the key to success with a child or adult. Don't quit. Look to find joy in each person for who they are. Ask the Holy Spirit to guide you, and He will. You're not alone on this journey, and it's our prayer that the Johnny and Friends Church Training Resources will encourage and equip you for every good work that God has planned for you.
Thank you, that worked perfectly. So behavior management, I think so many times, as I said earlier, it's because of fear. Like, what do we do? And I loved that video because there's this huge difference between a tantrum and a meltdown. Meltdowns can be prevented. Tantrums, my son, when he was 3, he had them. but we want to try to manage them. And all of them are a form of communication. I think if we look at it that way, then we look at the child, youth, or adult differently. So we want to use the specific behavior management techniques for your friend that you're serving. And one of the things that I keep saying is that we need to involve the parents. I have forms, sample forms down here. We do encourage an intake interview for any child, youth, or adult that you serve. Those are online. There's cards back at our table. Maybe, Sarah, you can even step out a little early, make sure you're back there and hand them all to these because they've asked me about them. There's a QR code on that code, that on that card, that takes you to all of our resources that are free. You can even have that video. You can download that and show it to your church because that's so important. You want to make sure that you know about these things, but you also want to involve the parents. And one of the things, how many of you know what IEP meetings are? You may have heard parents, they have nightmares with those. They hate them. They bake cookies to try to charm the people that they're meeting with. They do. There's, if you Google, there's all kinds of things to do. And it's because they're trying to get the services for their children. We don't want that to happen in the church. Because in the school, the parents can say, this works best for our child. And the school will say, no, we think this works best for your child. We may even disagree with some of the things that parents are doing as far as behavior management and some things with their children. But we're there to support the parents in their decisions with their children. So you want to try to use the safe behavior management that the parents have in place. We do need to have things in place, though. If the parents don't really care, we need to make sure that we care deeply for the child. And you want to make sure that you're talking to other leadership, like the buddy leader. There should be a leader over the buddy ministry because that will help with behavior management in so many ways. And you'll learn what triggers are. I had one little guy that I served when I was a buddy at my church. I knew when he started to snap his fingers that we're headed there. And we had this huge tunnel, and his name was Nick. And I'd say, Nick, is it time to go in the tunnel? Mm-hmm. And he'd go in the tunnel, and he might lay there the rest of the time, but that was great. I knew that's, and so we didn't have a meltdown, and it was great. He could be in there the whole time. She also talked a lot about first then. First the Bible story, then the craft, and stop there. Don't do first the Bible story, then the craft, then pray. No, start with first the Bible story, then craft. Then when you're at craft, after craft, we're going to pray. So you want to make sure you're doing all those simple things for them. She talked about timers. Timers are also great, and you can go to the dollar store. I don't even know. Are things just a dollar at the dollar store anymore? I don't know. But go to the dollar store. You can get desktop timers. Anything that helps them visualize. Those little 3-minute flip things. Those are great because that just helps them visualize, you know, like they're anxious. You see that, you know, I want mom. You know what? When all that sand's down there, then you see mom. Again, it's a visual thing.
We make sure that all timers are counting down, never counting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, make sure they're counting down, not up. That's a good suggestion, you
because
know.
Because when it counts up, you
exactly, your heart rate goes higher, yeah.
But if they count from 5 down, then
yeah. Great thought. Never thought of that one, Sarah. That's excellent. So personal space, too, we want to think about. She's going to do great. She's doing great. She's been here a year. Another thing is that personal safe space. Where do we feel safest as a human? In our mother's womb, where we're all close-knit together. That's where we feel safe. So children who have struggles with their own space, a placemat can be a simple thing. That if they're sitting at a table, this is Johnny's placemat. And you can't put a crayon on that placemat unless you get Johnny's permission. Hey, Johnny, is it okay if I put this crayon on there? Sure. Put it on. I talked about the hula hoop. Tunnels are great. And you can get adult-sized tunnels or you can get smaller tunnels because they're all enclosed. They just make them feel safe. And it's a safe space. And you can be creative about what a safe space might look like for the child, youth, or adult that you're serving because that's so important to them. There are things like the vestibular swings, which have nettings. They're expensive, but if your church has extra funds, those are great, too, because it's a swing that has a big net. And at our family retreats, we have adults can get in them. They're big enough for adults. You saw some swings on the first video I showed you. Those are just very, very soothing. And you do want to have an emergency plan. Just so you know, Buddy Ministries on a Sunday morning is not respite. So, and the reason I say that, it is for parents who are at church. So the parents should always be there. I don't think it's wise on a Sunday. Respite's important. That's another whole training. But on a Sunday morning, the buddies are to serve the families that are there. That's the purpose. And so the families will be there. And before a major meltdown happens, contact the parents. I'm sure nowadays you have cell phones that you can contact them. I always suggest also maybe the parents sit in the same place every Sunday. So if you can't get a hold of them on their phone, you know exactly where to find them so you can bring them and help with their child who may be having a little bit of a hard time. And don't try to intervene too soon. So many times we see a child getting agitated and we jump on them and, what's wrong? How are you doing? Sometimes they can work through it themselves. They can bring themselves down. They can talk themselves down. Many of them learn self-talking. It's how to calm down. So if they start talking to themselves, don't stop them. They're calming. That's a calming method for them. You want to continually monitor safety. And if there is a meltdown, try to get all the other children away or move them to a safe space as you can, because you don't want the other children to be fearful. And they don't happen often. They really don't. You may never see a major meltdown, but you just need to be aware and have a little bit of an emergency plan in place. And then once the child has calmed down, that's when you start to discuss it and say, you know, Johnny, can you help me understand what just happened? And maybe mom or dad are already there. And just because you want to reassure that child, youth, or adult that you're not fearful, that you're okay. And what that does to the parents, it's like, wow, you really love my child. You really care for my child. You also need to modify. Maybe after that, maybe there is a little meltdown. And after that, you realize, you know, what we did last Sunday didn't really work. So we're going to modify. And so you want to be able to do that. So what are the three different models of that are available? And we talked real briefly in the last workshop, but there's the three models, the integrated, the hybrid, and the specialized. The integrated model is where that child, youth, or adult participates in everything that typical child, youth, or adult participates in. Whether it is adult, maybe they can participate in the worship service, but they need a buddy sitting beside them in case they start to get fidgety. So anybody who just has a physical disability should always be 100% integrated. And so many times they might be a child, youth, or adult with cerebral palsy. They may have, like my friend Tim I talked about a little earlier, has a pretty significant speech impediment. He is brilliant. He is brilliant. So sometimes we make an assumption that if someone has a hard time speaking, that cognitively they have a disability, and that is not the case. So make sure that those with just the physical disabilities are always integrated into the typical program. Especially when it gets to junior high and high school, they may have been able to be integrated in elementary school, but then junior high and high school, they start to do really crazy things and it's too much for them. So you may have to try to start figuring out what tweaks do we need to make, work with the middle school leader and the youth leader to try to figure that out. The hybrid model is maybe on a Sunday morning, you realize, you know, Johnny loves the worship and the music, and he loves to just dance and be himself, and he can just fully engage in whatever they have, either for the child, youth, or adult. But then once it comes into getting into the classroom setting, he truly cannot sit still. And so many people have said, well, if he can be in worship, can't he sit in the Sunday school? No, he really can't. You know, and don't make him. Again, we want church to be a safe space, not something where we make them do something. And if he feels like he can't, take him out, figure some things out to do there. And that's where the specialized classroom can come in. And that's the last model. And this is the hybrid and the specialized, and all of these can kind of work together. So you have that the integrated, where they're totally included in everything. Then you have the hybrid, and then you have the specialized. So maybe there's a child in the hybrid that can actually be in separate and also be part of the typical. But you may have a child who really can do a little things, you know, with some of the other kiddos, but needs to mostly be in the specialized model. And that would be what I would call a classroom that's set up just for the child, youth, or adults with disabilities. And you saw some of that in the video. And that can look different ways. So the specialized model is a room, Sunday school room, where you do have some teachings going on, but you might have those swings, you might have pads, you might, there's a church that I even know, I was so happy to hear, they had one child that would hurt themselves, and so they put padding on the walls and made it look beautiful. Nobody noticed, you know, and it was like a safe space. And so there's ways you can do that, and that's the specialized model. But what are some things that you can do if the child or your friend cannot be in, needs to be in a specialized, well, a sensory room if available. And one of the things that churches have the hardest time with is space. We don't have any space. If your church has a closet, can you turn a closet into a sensory room? Take everything out, put some low lighting in it, and a couple beanbag chairs. The other thing I've suggested to churches, and I've loved it, I've watched them do it, you can buy those pop-up tents. That you can get at Five Below, and they turn into this little round thing. Sunday mornings, you pop them open, you throw a beanbag chair in there, some low lighting, maybe some soft music, or some sensory toys. And right there, you've created a sensory room, which is lovely, because maybe that's what Johnny needs. Or I talked about even wagons. The church I used to go to, they had those big wagons, and I saw them pulling kids all, they didn't come in the middle of the sanctuary, but all around the rest of the church. And they also had a couple of those big kid trikes that were donated. You'd see kids riding trikes all around the church. I loved it. It was beautiful. What a great thing. So there's ways you can do it. If it's a youth or an adult with disabilities, if you have a great cafe here, take them to the cafe. Kind of feel like they're going to Starbucks with a friend, which they probably never do. So figure out ways that you can interact with them. How can you best come alongside of them in very, very practical ways? I am running out of time. Interacting and becoming a friend. What you want to do is you want to positively support the person through any behavior difficulties first. As much as possible, do not speak for them or do things for them. Like sometimes we make an assumption that, well, if they can't speak, they probably don't care what color they make something. No, even if it takes you a long time, try to let them make that decision. You don't want to make decisions for them. Allow them to voice their own opinion. I don't want to go there today. No, we're going there today. No, I don't want to go there today. Okay, you know, and you might say, but are you teaching them correct behavior? You know what? That's not our job at the church. Our job is to love them, to come alongside of them and to love them and to be there for them. And eventually, they may start listening to some of your suggestions, but it's loving them. You also want to make sure that you are always treating the person in an age-appropriate way. It might be a 17-year-old, but cognitively a 3-year-old. We talk to them like a 17-year-old. So make sure you're always using age-appropriate language with them. Even I had a dear friend, he had his PhD in special education, and he had this great program. He said, if I hear one more adult Sunday school class singing "If You're Happy and You Know It," he goes, I'm going to spit at somebody. Because he said, what high schoolers sing that? And I get it, you know? He said, now, if there's someone that says, I want to sing, if you're happy, he goes, then I do, but I never let anybody plan it. We want to make sure it's age appropriate for them. We also don't talk about them to others in their presence. So many times we make an assumption. We make assumptions. You know, if they're intellectually or cognitively disabled, they can't understand that we're talking about them. Please don't talk about them. Please don't do that. They understand. Their parents understand. We don't want people talking about our children in front of other people. Why would we do it to the friend that we're serving? And let's always remember that autism is a matter of the body, not the soul. The soul of the student with autism needs to be included in the Christian education program of his or her church. Everybody has a soul. Everybody has a soul. So, what are some tools for the buddy system? Buddy training and questionnaire. We encourage all buddies need to fill out an application. I'm sure all churches now have safe sanctuaries where you have to do background checks and finger checks and all of that. So that all has to happen. Right on the QR code that Sarah has, she'll have some up front. We have right on our Johnny and Friends website, you can go to that QR code. It'll take you to all of our church resources. We have fillable applications. All you do is take away the name Johnny and Friends and put in your church. And right there's your application for a buddy. I also have sample intake forms down here, which are also there, that are, because we ask everybody we serve, we need an intake form on them. Like, what are triggers? What are likes? What can't they eat? You know, all of those things. That's also fillable forms, and it's right through that QR code as well. You want a clear communication system in place. That means, like, so you should have somebody who oversees all of your buddies. Like, that would be the director of the buddy ministry. And so then they start, after the applications come in and you're trained and you take them through some of the stuff I went over today, they fill out the application, and then they start being assigned. I don't recommend that the child, youth, or adult with a disability, I don't recommend that they only have one buddy that serves them every Sunday. Because then what happens when that person goes on vacation or they're sick, then all of a sudden we got a trigger happening. So I like to suggest that they have two that are signed up and then every other week. I mean, because that way people don't burn out also as a buddy. Because if you're doing it every week, you will miss your worship service. So I recommend that start out with, if you have enough, that would be perfect to just have people serve every other week, say serve that same person every other week. But I think it just keeps from people burning out, and then they do it 6 months and they're like, I just really want to go back into the worship service. So those are just some little practical things. And also one of the things is that it's okay to have parents let you know that their child's not coming. So now you have somebody that wants a buddy for their child. You have that buddy lined up. And first week they don't show up. That's okay. Life happens. Second week, by third week, it's okay to call them and say, you know, we had a buddy lined up. I really need you to call and let us know if you're not coming, or we won't be able to serve you. We want both the buddy and the person we're serving to have some responsibility there, and that's okay. That's a good thing to have in place. You can also have individual binders or individual sensory bags for each child, youth, or adult that has the disability. That's a great thing to have online. There, it's also how to make a sensory bag, what to put in them. That doesn't cost a lot of money. And supply bags. And then also the child, youth, or adult that you're serving, you always want to know where the parents are in the church building so you can contact them. I've got the look back there. I'm coming. Because they're all coming in here. Hey, we're in control, guys. We can't. All right. So a buddy is not a teacher assistant. This is really important. Being present in the class and working with this child one-on-one will allow the teacher to teach. So you are not there to assist the teacher. If the teacher, the classroom teacher, at the Sunday school teacher, whatever it is, if they say, can you do this? The answer is, no, I can't. I'm with Noah. Could you help so-and-so? I need a second person to take so-and-so to the restroom. No, actually, I can't. I'm with Noah. You are not there to support the teacher. Because what happens if you go out of the classroom and all of a sudden Noah goes, where'd Miss Sarah go? Where'd Miss Sarah go? You're there for that child. You're not responsible for other students in the classroom either. You're responsible for the person that you're assigned to. And please know it's not a babysitting service. Remember, go way back to when I started an hour ago. It's for family support. It's for discipleship. It's for kingdom belonging. So make sure you know that. So qualities of a buddy: present when scheduled, consistently loving and compassionate, patient, and willing to persevere through some difficult situations, and has to be confidential. You might see some things on that intake form that nobody else knows about that child. You might not know how that child became tragically disabled. I had a hard scenario where it was a child that had shaken baby syndrome. And the buddy that served him started to tell their people in the church, and people didn't know that. It was a bad situation. Confidentiality is so, so, so important. And I ask you to please, please remember that. and look at your friend, can do. Look what they can do. Oh my goodness, look what they can do. You want to get so excited about what they can do. And look at what God is doing and how he is teaching. And go with it. So, if you can pass a background check, like making new friends, can miss a worship service, and are willing to let your life be changed, then you should be a buddy. Buddy, friend, peer, mentor, whatever you want to call it is absolutely fine. And I will close with this quote again that Sarah and I just love. To be included, you must simply be there. But to belong, you must be missed. Thank you. I'm done.